program, ever since it started in February of 2004, we prided ourselves on allowing all different kinds of opinion on public education to be heard. And I think we have heard just about every concept, permutation, and point of view in public education in the state of Indiana on this program, including many of the leading figures in public education, whether it has been Michelle Reed, has been on here once, Diane Ravitch has been on here once, we've had Kevin Chavis has been on here a couple of times, the head of the United Negro College Fund, UNCF, they've got a point of view, they've been on, and yes, we've had the Mind Trust, and yes, we've had Stand for Children on the program and other organizations. Well, over the last 2 or 3 months, I had a number of people come up to me in the community and said, Amos, you have got to get a hold of, you have got to read a book by a Hoosier by the name of Doug Martin. He's a gentleman who has a PhD in 19th century American literature. That, you know, Drew, that's, you can get a real high paying job, you know, with a degree in 19th century American literature. But he's got a PhD and he wrote a book about, 10, 12 years ago called A Study of Walt Whitman's Mimetic Prosody, whatever this is. It didn't do that well. It was a nice book. But when he wrote Hoosier School Heist, folk are getting the book. They're talking about it. It is a detailed book with pages upon pages of notes and citations and where he gets the information from. School reformers hate the book. Somebody sent me tweets this morning saying that Doug Martin is the, he writes fiction. My favorite was school reformer Jennifer Wagner. Now, Jennifer, I love Jennifer to death. Nice young lady, great, great person, great Democrat. But to call our guest today, the Larry Vaughn of K through 12 education. She's talking about, you know, Drew, he's equating our guest to Larry. Now, you know, sometimes Larry goes off the deep end. Everybody knows who Larry is. Yeah. But this book, facts, figures, citations, and, oh, it's going to be real interesting today. The book is called Hoosier School Heist. It is a scathing indictment of the role of big money, corporate money, Wall Street raiders, West Coast hedge fund folks, corporations, Tony Bennett, Mitch Daniels, Stand for Children, the Mind Trust, et cetera, and its effect on public education, not just in this country, but specifically here in the state of Indiana, using public documents, newspaper articles, what others have said about the issue and the problem. And with that, we welcome Doug Martin. Mr. Martin, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, it's all these people saying, Amos, you've got to have Doug Martin on the program. What motivated you to write this book? Because your background, you're not, you know, necessarily a teacher. You didn't go to school to be a teacher or an educator or run a university or a school system. You went to study and understand 19th century American literature. What motivated you to write this?
Well, I wanted to write a book that people would read. That's the goal of every writer, wants to be read. I started out writing poetry, and then I moved into literary scholarship, right, and there's not much of an audience for it. So the goal is to be read. So I was reading through newspaper accounts of the imagined charter schools that were written by Karen Francisco and various people at the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette, right, one day. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is outlandish.
And these were the stories that showed that, you know, there was big money involved in Imagine, and they were doing all these shady things with their schools in Fort Wayne and here in Indianapolis, but more Fort Wayne was more concerned with Fort Wayne, and the academic achievement of the students at the school at Imagine School was among the worst of any charter schools in the state.
Yeah, the CEO of Imagine Charter Schools is Dennis Bakke. He has a connection with Mitch Daniels, because when Daniels was on the Indianapolis Power and Light Company and they merged with the AES Corporation, AES was Bakke's group. Mm-hmm. So imagine charter schools has a lot of rental schemes that they set up. So they have a nonprofit board set up, and then it funnels money to the for-profit company. The for-profit company sometimes sells the buildings to a movie corporation. Then the movie corporation turns around, rents it back to Imagine's for-profit company, and then the for-profit company rents it back to the nonprofit company, and outlandish amounts of money are being drained from the taxpayers' chest because of this.
And so you started reading these articles in the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette that has been very critical of a number of the education experiments here in the state of Indiana. What caused you to really start looking and kind of put this stuff together in a book?
After I first wrote about Imagine Charter Schools, I had a woman who lives in Texas who has been following them on the national level for quite some time. Her husband used to be a part of Jimmy Carter's administration when he was the governor of Georgia. Mm-hmm. And she contacted me. I have no idea how she found my email, but she did. And she said, I read your article on Bakke's group, and can I call you? So she called me, and she explained to me that this was going on. This movement of privatization was going on all across America, and Bakke was just a small part of it. And she kept encouraging me to write. I met a lot of people from New York who were reading my articles when no one in Indiana was paying attention, and they inspired me to keep digging. And the more I dug, the more I saw. And crony capitalism, felons, as I like to say. The book has two prostitutes. It has felons. It has people who have been in prison, people who should probably be in prison.
People been in prison running charter schools?
Well, involved in the,
in the movement.
Corporate school movement, yes.
When you how do you describe the corporate school movement? Because if you look at it, does it include things like when Bill Gates said, I'm going to invest huge sums of money because we don't need 4,000 student high schools. High schools ought to be little, like 200 to 300 to 400 students. And now, after all these years, Bill Gates is saying, well, maybe I made a mistake. Maybe that wasn't the right idea. Over the years, their business and foundations have made investments in public education to kind of improvement. Are you saying that it's wrong for foundations in the private sector to invest to make public education better?
No, I'm not saying that, but when you look at what's behind some of this, for instance, one of the groups that you don't hear much about is called the New Ventures New Schools Venture Fund, and this is a group of billionaires who give out loans, some with interest, some are grants, to charter schools across the country. Many of the people who were funding the IPS board candidates are a part of this group in one way or another. If you read documents that these people have written, it comes right out and says, if we only had the federal government throwing $600 million into charter schools in this country, we could rig it so that we have a system for, we have a market system set up the same way the housing market was set up, where you had Fannie Mae involved, which was a part of the government, and then you had the banks giving out loans to people who didn't even have jobs, and then the banks would take that money and they would bundle it up into these packages and sell it to pension plans, knowing it was going to crumble. Then they would take out insurance on these plans, knowing they would fail, and making money from every direction. So this is a kind of a Wall Street heist, I guess, that they envision for the public school corporation.
239-1310, 239-1310 with Doug Martin. He's the author of the book, Hoosier School Heist. You go back and you talk about the issues of choice. You talk about the issues of vouchers. You go back not just to the Tony Bennett era or the Mitch Daniels era. You go back to an organization that has worked in – you went back, as I believe, to Wisconsin, to Milwaukee, where the voucher movement first got a strong foothold, and also working with an organization called BAIL, Black Achievement Educational Opportunity. What's their role? Was that kind of the – from your research in this book, one of the first efforts? In terms of private dollars involved in public education?
Yeah, the Black Alliance for Educational Options has ties to the Amway DeVos family, the Walmart family. They were getting funded by the Bush administration, I believe, at one point. Some of that money may have went into Gary. I can't remember. It's mentioned in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems like this was an attempt to use cover to try to persuade the African-American community that the charter school voucher take on education was the answer.
But in your book, you're not necessarily an anti-Republican book, because you also call out Democrats and progressives that, in your view, are not helping traditional public schools.
Yeah, well, Bill Clinton was the first president to allow charter schools to multiply across the country. So, and then you have here in Indianapolis what I refer to as the Wall Street Democratic crowd, mm-hmm. Bart Peterson's Mind Trust. Nationally, you have the Center for American Progress, which the Center for American Progress, everyone calls a progressive organization, but it's basically a think tank that was set up from people who worked with Bill Clinton. And they have one little report where they worked with a right-wing organization, and their idea is to eliminate school boards all across the country. It's like, we don't need school boards. And one of the things they say is nepotism. Which, when you read my book, you realize that these people here know a thing or two about crony capitalism. So, you think
there define that term. There may be listeners that don't understand the term crony capitalism.
Basically, it's when government officials are elected to solely serve the purposes of their friends and political donors
with money.
With money. Yes.
And it's not necessary, because when people sometimes hear that term, they think, ah, that must be that Mitt Romney guy. That must be George W. Bush. They think it's all Republican. But it's not.
No. It's not. So the system is set up so that people with money buy the elections, and then they get something in return, whether it's bills passed to spread charter schools across the country, or voucher programs, or whatever it may be. If you look at my book, there were several people who run charter schools in Indiana who were funding this pact, mm-hmm. which is, I like to refer to as the Walmart Amway Hedge Fund Pact. It's a front group called the American Federation of Children. There was another one called the Alliance for School Choice. These were the Walmart, the Voss people, with several hedge fund managers. Some had ties to Jeb Bush and the Bush family, and several charter schools, and they were funneling money into James Bopp Jr.'s address in Terre Haute, Indiana. Bopp is the Citizens United lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And they were spreading this money to the Republicans in Indiana, and they were also spreading it to lawmakers in six or seven other states.
From your point of view, as we look in, and we're in the year 2015, what do you feel is the greatest danger to the traditional public school system in this state?
I think one of the greatest dangers is people don't understand what is going on. And I hope my book creates a picture and gives a different narrative than what you hear from the media or from the Mind Trust or whoever it may be who is giving their talking points. So the more people that wake up and see what is going on, then there's going to be more of a reaction against it.
The fact that the legislature is publicly saying that the way we fund public schools in Indiana is unfair, particularly to growing suburban districts that have had financial problems. They've had to lay off teachers. They've had to make cutbacks, even though the number of students they have grows. And there seems to be pressure to provide more money to those districts, and the fear is at the expense of our rural school districts as well as the urban school districts. Given that, and given what your book talks about in terms of the involvement of big money, corporate money from both sides of the political aisle, in educational alternatives, is how the legislature divides up this nearly $16 billion pie over 2 years for K through 12 education, if that comes down the wrong way, Could that be the catalyst that finally wakes people up here in Indiana about public education?
It may be. I don't know if you're familiar with what happened in Duggar, Indiana.
No, tell us what happened in Duggar.
Duggar is a small
town. That's a small town.
No, it's very small. It's in Sullivan County. Mm-hmm. One of their schools was closed down, maybe two. I can't remember the details. And they decided to start a charter school.
Mm-hmm.
So at first, they wanted to have a community-led charter school like every community does. Mm-hmm. You want to have your local teachers and your parents involved in your community school. They applied to the Indiana Charter School Board and was denied the charter. So they ended up going to the Indiana Cyber Charter School, which is an online learning outfit, which is being sued by another group, another corporation. I can't remember the details, for something like $600,000. And also there's been rumors that Peabody Coal Corporation and a railroad corporation were going to start kicking some money in down there. So what happens is you get – Duggar people got in a situation that was a no-win situation. In order to keep their school, they had to sell out to someone. I mean, the idea of a community-led school is a hard thing to pull off because you have to have millions of dollars of startup money. And you're going to have to turn to somebody that has that money to get it. Right?
Is that the basic unfairness of how charter schools are set up? In other words, if you look at the history of charter schools, at least here in this city, every charter school that started that was quote unquote community based, Flanner House Charter School.
Exactly.
What was it? The other school that
the project school.
The project school that were community based. And to be fair to the other side, those schools made some errors. I mean, they were not pristine in how they were conducting business, not to say they were doing anything, you know, necessarily unlawful. But those schools have been run out. The Archdiocese couldn't make a go of taking two Catholic schools and turn them into charter. Is the playing field so unfair that nobody, whether you're in the biggest city in the state or one of the smallest towns in the state, can't set up what a charter school initially was supposed to be, a community-based school? Everybody talks about Marva Collins, God love her and what she did. She didn't have, as I understand it, any big corporations behind her when she started her schools up in Chicago back in the day.
Yeah, I would say yes. It's very difficult. And I guess to try to put this in a bigger perspective, what a lot of these people envision is a corporation-run charter school that has 300 schools across America, just like a Walmart. So you have a little Walmart kind of charter school on every corner, and Arthur Rock, the COO of Facebook, and several other people who funded candidates who won the IPS board election, invest in rocket ship education. Some of them have ties to KIPP. It's hard to tell how much money is being invested. It's hard to tell what is a loan and what is a grant. But the goal is to scale these schools everywhere. So you have a rocket ship. You have one in every town across America.
So it's like,
the money is going to start pouring in for these people.
So it's like having a Walgreens on every corner. It's like having a Shell gas station on every corner.
Exactly.
It's like having a Starbucks on every intersection.
Yeah. So someone like Arthur Rock, who is a hedge fund venture capitalist guy who has money to burn, he can come in and buy several school board members in Indianapolis, or there were several other towns that they were involved with, the same group. Minneapolis was one of them. Austin, Texas was one. There was a small school district in New Jersey. This whole group of these people had influence in. They can buy out members to get influence for charter schools. And when they invest in these charter schools, they may be losing money now.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, if they scale these things, and there's 1,000 of them across America, they're going to start raking in some funding.
239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoon's name. His name is Doug Martin. The book is called Hoosier School Heist. Let me start today with Dave. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, good afternoon, Amos.
Good afternoon.
Where can we purchase the book, Doctor?
You can get it through my website, which is HoosierSchoolHeist.com. You go to that, and there's an order page, which the page pops up, and it and the first link says available now on Amazon. That link will take you to the Amazon page, and then below that, I believe it says something like order now or something. You click on that, you can order it through PayPal. Now, if you wanted to send me a check, then you can just email me through my website, too. It's doug@HoosierSchoolHeist.com, and I'll give you all the information that you need for that.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening.
Let me go to Mayhem at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, how's it going? I know he can't really go deep into it, but can you go I know we're talking about dealing with the people that sold the children out. But can you talk about the damage is have done to certain children and these theories that prison the pipeline? And also, can you talk about some of the teacher unions that have sold the children out and getting paid from the stock market from this? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, the teachers unions on a national level are pretty lame. I mean, they, you know, you have some of these leaders who are making $500,000 a year, to sit at the table with people like Bill Gates. Mm-hmm. I think that's wrong. I think they need to be a little bit more aggressive in fighting this. So that's one issue, yes. Now, in terms of the standardized testing, a good friend of mine, John Harris Laughlin, is was one of the first people to point this out in an article. He's involved with several groups here. Parrot Power Indianapolis is one of them. This whole testing standardization goes back to the eugenics movement at the turn of the century. And everybody was classified according to how smart they were, right? So it was a way to segregate people. This gets translated, gets shipped over to Nazi Germany, right? I'm not saying the standardized testing is out to kill innocent kids, but this is the same kind of mentality. Once you start saying this person is different, this person is not as good as this person, I mean, you're opening up a big can of worms.
Let me go back and use the Duggar, Indiana example. Education reformers talk about school choice and that parents ought to have an opportunity to choose a school. So if the school their kids are in is not a well-performing school for that child, parents ought to have the freedom, to move. And on paper, that works well in a big city like Indianapolis because there are options. So educational reformers could say, oh, well, we've set up options. So you can go to a charter school. You can use the voucher and go to a private school. You can transfer to another public school. You know, these options are there. But in a Duggar, Indiana, and the governor is talked about in his State of the State speech, earlier that there's 100,000 kids in poor performing schools in this state and they ought to have an opportunity to go to a good school. In a small town like Duggar, if the Duggar school is, based on the testing, a low performing school and there's no parochial school in that town, then the options for the parents in that small town is to bus their kid 30, 40, 50 miles one way to get to a decent school. Yeah. Is that fair to, before I get to the fairness of big city folks, is that fair to our folks out there in the real world?
No, it's not fair. But yeah, there was a question. They would have had to bus their kids. There is a school, I don't know if it gets vouchers, but there is some Christian school in that area. But, you know, that's not right for everyone. So yeah, they would have had to bust these kids way out of the way. Yeah.
239-1310. 239-1310's afternoon's name is. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more with Doug Martin, author of the book Hoosier School Heist. And we'll ask him about the situation. We'll ask him about the Mine Trust. We'll ask him about Stand for Children. And we'll also talk about, since there are all these big corporations and folks whose regular business, they have to have disclosure of how they spend their money, how they do business, why they don't practice what they preach when they're dealing in public education. It's Afternoons with Amos talking about education in Indiana and the effect and the impact of big money. It's Afternoons with Amos after these.
Hello, this is Maggie Lewis, president of the City County Council. And when I want to stay informed, I always listen to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
239-1310, 239-1310's Afternoons with Amos. School reformers used as their justification that we need school reform was that traditional public schools were failing students, particularly students of color, whether they were African American or Latino, and that charter schools would be more flexible, and if a charter school didn't work, you know, it could quickly be shut down and move on. When you wrote the book, did you see evidence that the school reform movement, that all of these dollars invested in charter schools were concerned about the quality and that they moved quickly if a school wasn't working academically to either shore it up or shut it down?
No, as I point out in several cases in my book, there were schools here in Indianapolis, that charter schools, and as you know yourself, Amos, that they're not performing well, and the mayor doesn't seem to be too concerned with it. But if you're a locally run charter school, a community-led one, then it seems that they do target you for shutdown. And this is the typical thing that's going on across the country. A lot of people, one of the big narratives that these people discuss is the New Orleans Hurricane Katrina and how, you know, what the New Orleans miracle. That is, the narrative is that after the hurricane, all these people went down, invested money in the charter schools, and they're so great.
Because the schools in New Orleans physically were wiped out.
Exactly. And even before some of the people living in poverty had their electricity turned back on, the government was giving the schools over to charter leaders. The Bush administration put some money into it. I don't know all the details on New Orleans, but my understanding is there's no truly public schools left in the city. There is a book that just came out by a professor from Georgia State. Her name is Christian Burris, and she goes into detail about what happens there and sees it as the dispossession of black teachers and just the taking away of land from people that, you know, need their public schools. So it's a pretty harsh book from my understanding about what is going on there. And a lot of this is a land grab. You see a lot of white, rich people move into areas where poor minority people live, and it's a way to write off some of this. If you donate to a charter school, you can write off on your taxes. If you're a hedge fund manager, you can loan to a charter school and then charge interest. I mean, that is taking place. How much of it is taking place? It's really hard to track because the records are not available. And a lot of the 990 nonprofit forms are too vague to see who's actually, you know,
investing in
the. Yeah.
All right, let me go to the phones in Jane at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi. I have two questions about your book. Does it include the fact that tie in school reform with the tax levy? Because when IPS was first legislated into being, they went through the same thing with tax levy, and those schools were then handed over to private schools, and people that were going to teach the school, teach specific schools, were given those schools until the tax levy was straightened out. And it looks like it's an updated the same version.
When you say,
so we'll tie that in.
The situation you're talking about with IPS, what year was that? Was that in the
18?
In the 18 somethings?
And it was 12 years that IPS had that Indiana had the debate about whether tests could be levied for schools. And those schools were then really what we're looking at privatized then. It looks like the same cycle.
It sounds like you've given Dr. Doug Martin some new history.
Yeah,
some history
he had. Thank you. I wrote that down. I will look into that.
And the other part was that even more recently, Indiana was doing Sean Riverside. He was really brought in under the idea of school reform. And school reform then was where they go, like Kentucky, for all equal basis for taxes for all children of the state, or some other kind of reform. So, you know, it seems like we are just continuing to recycle the same pattern trying to make it work.
Yes, yes, that is right, yeah.
See, that's why we have the smartest talk show audience in the country, because they bring up things that we're all learning. Thank you, Jane. Let me go to Dominique at 239-1310. Hi there. We've answered Dominique's question. Let me go to Anonymous. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. What's up?
Yes. I wanted to ask him, in the 1956, a Southern Manifesto was written about the 1954 Brown versus Board of Education. And the Southern Manifesto said that they wanted to deregulate schools across the country because they did not want to apply to the Brown versus Board of Education regulation. Now, how does this charter schools tie into this? And also, I called before on the books, Diana Resbeck book, The Reign of Error, The Reign of Error, and Privatizing the Public Schools, and Martin L. Grossman book, The Conspiracy of Ignorance, The Failure of Public Schools in America. Now, how is this related to that?
Great question.
That's a great question. I do think you're right. The history is a racist history. The whole school voucher movement, which the first idea goes back to Milton Friedman, and it was a way to so white people didn't have to send their kids to school with blacks. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. And I think there.
But that
is
was the original voucher movement in the South after.
Yeah.
But how would but Friedman then came around to support the voucher movement that allowed students from lower income households, including minority students, to attend a private school.
Yeah, I think Friedman's first essay on it may have been 1955. I might be wrong, but I think it's in the book. But and that was a way to that's what Friedman went to Chile when Salvador Allende was dethroned down there, and they put in the dictator Piaget with U.S. help, and Friedman went down and trained what was called the Chicago Boys to privatize education down there. A few years ago, it's gotten so bad down there. A few years ago, there were hundreds of thousands of people in the street protesting what has gone on in the public schools and the universities there.
Okay, I want to ask one more question.
Uh-huh.
Now, Thomas Friedman, the world is flat. How is he related? Is he related to Milton Friedman and the Friedman Foundation?
No.
I don't believe so, no.
Okay. Now, and the second book I recommend people read, Thomas Frank, The Wrecking Crew, How Conservatives Rule. Now, this is this deregulation of schools just like their deregulation of unions in Indiana, where they had the state to go, the no right to work state in Indiana? Is this a deregulation of schools just like they deregulated the phone companies, they deregulated the oil companies? How is this tied into the economics of free enterprise?
All right, great question.
Yeah, they want to, destroy the teachers' unions like they've done a pretty good job since the 80s of destroying the other unions, so that they're after the public worker unions now, so that plays a part of it. The group that they want to replace a lot of these teachers with is here in Indianapolis, Teach for America. Now, if you look at the campaign records for the candidates who won, we're talking Marianne Sullivan and a couple other ones.
Lanier Echols
Bentley.
Yeah, Kelly Bentley.
If you look at their campaign money, some of that money is tied into a group called the Leadership for Educational Equity. This, my understanding, was founded by, it's got some kind of connections with Teach for America. So Teach for America is in the behind the scenes in all this, too. A lot of these people who have funded the board race have ties to Teach for America. I believe one of them is actually a board member of Teach for America, or was at one point on the national level.
I appreciate the call. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's After News Days. What? Doug Martin, one of the puzzles in the so-called school reform movement and the big money, given the fact that the Indianapolis public schools, in terms of the number of students it reaches in the city, only reaches maybe 20-23% of all public school students in the city It reaches about a third of all African-American students in the city. Given that most students, whether they're students of color or white students, don't attend an IPS school, why is all this money being spent to control a school system that controls a minority of public school or potential public school students in the city? Why is that? It would seem to me if you wanted to control an entire city school system, they would be throwing money at all 11 school districts.
Yeah, well, the Stanford Children member, what's his name?
Justin Miller? Miller, yeah.
Well, he answered that question on this show, right, that they didn't have enough resources, so I guess they haven't recruited enough people to be a part of this. But so they focus in on the, you know, what they can at any given moment. So that's one of the answers, I guess.
In terms of the money spent to buy control of school boards, how does the community fight that? Have there been instances, and I know you didn't necessarily write about the book, but as you've done research and you've talked to others around the country, have there been instances where a community has been able to beat big money in terms of school board elections?
Yes, there has been some. There was a woman who's a part of the Parents Across America movement, and I can't remember what her name is right off the top of my head. She ran for one of the board memberships against someone who was backed by big money and actually won.
And this was where?
I believe it's California.
Los Angeles, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember the details. But yeah, there have been instances where it has happened when enough people knew in the community what was going on that the money did not.
Is it something where the community now, particularly in IPS, now has to pay much more attention to school board races and understand, because it's fair to say now that big money is going to now be an issue in IPS school board races from now on, that people know that this is the game that people are playing?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a part of it. It's interesting too. I mean, what you mentioned, some of the tweets about my book and whatnot. I have emailed every Republican at the State House to ask them to get on stage with me and have a debate about all this. I only heard back from Randy Head, who is in terms of public education, he's actually more pro public education than most of them. Any of them who want to get on stage with me and have a discussion, I'd be happy to.
Does that go for Stanford Children and the Mind Trust and Democratic?
Any of them that want to come and have a discussion about this, any of them that has the courage to, I welcome them on stage with me.
Why are they afraid?
Because I think once you get done reading this book, there's some serious questions. And when I first started doing this, I was called a conspiracy theorist by them. And then they ignored me because nobody knew enough about me. And now that the word's getting out, then they want me to go away, probably. But I remember being here in Indianapolis talking one day to a group of individuals. And I was describing to them the Gulen Charter Movement, which is a group of charter schools that's the biggest charter operator in America. Has something like 180.
They're bigger than some of the other ones you were talking about earlier?
This has like 180 some schools now. And what it is it's a group who's a Muslim religious group out of Turkey, and the person who is their leader is Fethullah Gulen. He lives in exile in Pennsylvania.
He lives in exile in Pennsylvania.
In Pennsylvania.
I understand they're from Turkey. Is that correct?
They're from Turkey. They fly people into America and teach in the schools, and they put on visas. And then this group takes a percentage of our tax money and feeds it back into the group in Turkey. Mm-hmm. And I was describing all this. There's a woman I talk about in my book who was married to a Gulenist who was involved in a charter school in Ohio. And I looked through the documents from the state's office, the auditor who audited this charter school, and sure enough, what she said is true. There was questions about money being going back to Turkey. So I was explaining all this that it had been on 60 Minutes. The Washington Post had written about it. I was the first one to write about it in Indiana. And these people looked at me like I was crazy. I said, well, you have a Gulen charter school in your backyard, and the FBI has been involved in raiding several of these across the country. And they go, this guy is a right-wing or whatever, not right-wing, but he's a conspiracy theorist nut. Well, about 3 weeks later, that very charter school here in Indianapolis was raided by the
and
FBI.
And these are the math and, the math and science
correct.
Schools.
Yes.
Northwest
yes.
and South, they're part of this ownership by the Gulen organization.
That is right.
Let me go to Mary Ann at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi. Just to let listeners know, if they're concerned about what they're hearing on this show, or if they're just concerned about issues going on with defunding of public schools, whether or not, you know, they're where Doug is right now, and Doug has a lot of good things to say. There are several ways that they can get in touch with other parents who are concerned. And can I give you a quick list?
Okay.
Which is, there's a Facebook page pulling together Indianapolis area, not just IPS, but Indianapolis area parents, teachers, taxpayers, called Indy, I-N-D-Y, Apples, A-P-P-L-E-S. Indy information there.
Indy Apples.
Indy Apples Facebook page.
Okay.
I think that Doug Martin mentioned Parent Power, mm-hmm. which also has been around for a few years and very involved. And they have both a Facebook page and maybe a website. There is a statewide, not-for-profit, 501c3 organization called the Indiana Coalition for Public Education. The officers of that are all very well recognized, excellent recognized reputations within the field of education, who have worked in education for 30, maybe even 40 years. Many of the names you would recognize and have probably spoken with on air. They have a website and Facebook page. They follow legislation very carefully. And they are actually at the State House, I think, almost every day talking with senators and representatives. There's a group in Monroe County called the Monroe County Coalition for Public Education, and there's a group in Fort Wayne called the Northeast Indiana Coalition for Public Education.
Mm.
They could very quickly bring anyone interested up to speed on what might be happening, both good and bad, and what they might do if they want to get involved.
All right. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
239-1310. 239-1310 is after those names. We'll take a break. We'll be back with Dr. Doug Martin. He's the author of the book, Hoosier School Heist. And when we come back, we'll ask him, how much damage to public education in Indiana did Dr. Tony Bennett do? Not the singer. Y'all know the Tony Bennett I'm talking about. It's after those names, after these.
Hello, this is Sheriff John Layton. And when I want to stay informed, I always listen to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
With Doug Martin, he is the author of a scathing indictment on corporate money, the damage, in his view, that Republican and Democratic school reformers have done to public education in Indiana. The book is called Hoosier School Heist. It is available on Amazon.com or at a website, Hoosierschoolhouse.com. How, in your view, how much damage did Dr. Tony Bennett do to public education in this state?
Well, Bennett's an interesting character. I've never met Tony Bennett. I've met several people who know Tony Bennett in one way, shape, or form. My guess is Bennett bought all of this hook, line, and sinker from Jeb Bush and others. When I speak, I like to say that Jeb Bush was really the superintendent of the public schools in Indiana when Tony Bennett had that office. A lot of it was imported from Florida. I think, of course, there was damage done, but I don't think, of course, it wasn't Bennett's ideas. The AP released some emails after all this scandal with the DeHaan Charter School went down, the Crystal House Academy. And it mentions Al Hubbard playing a big part behind the scenes. And he, in one email, he talks about contacting the people from the DeVos family, mm-hmm. Betsy DeVos's people. There's another guy in my book, I can't remember who he mentions.
Right.
So this was before Bennett even knew what was going on. So there were people working behind the scenes to do all this from the get-go. And as I said, the Hoosiers for Economic Growth PAC was the PAC that they were using to funnel all this money from the Walton and DeVos Hedge Fund Group. There were other people, Patrick Byrne from Overstock.com, so a few Hoosiers, Mike Weaver. So I think Bennett just, Daniels knew that Bennett would be the one who would just rubber stamp all this through. Now there's talk today about making, you know, the governor appoint the superintendent of public education. I believe there's a new bill that is going to allow someone from out of state to be the state superintendent.
Oh, I had heard that
yeah,
one. That,
I heard that last
crazy.
Night. I haven't seen it, but that's what one of the union people were telling me last night. I don't think it really matters. I think people, a lot of places where I go, people go, oh, Tony Bennett, he's so evil, but then they reelected every person who was behind passing all these bills, so they defeated Bennett, but then they didn't see the bigger picture.
Let me go back to, because you mentioned Crystal DeHaan and Crystal House Academies. That's to be fair, is that an example of a charter school that isn't corporately connected? It's basically Ms. DeHaan's, I mean, she's got the resources. It's like Oprah. It's like an Oprah school. It's
yeah.
her resources. She's not really tied into any group. She's, and the biggest incentive for it to be a success is her name is on there. So if there's something that goes wrong, it's her name that
yeah.
suffers.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
I could say that's fair. She is a big funder of politicians. Like yeah. the AP story mentioned, well, she funded the Republican Party. Well, she has funded Democrats, not so much at the state level, but she funded Evan Bayh, who was a big part of No Child Left Behind. So she gets the money out to Democrats as well. So you can't just paint her as a Republican donor. That's not correct. I did go through the finances of that charter school. Another thing that LoBianco and those forgot to mention or didn't right. really take the time to discover or whatever. There was a part in there where it lists the money that is going to travel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's some unreal amount.
In terms of money for staff of these charter schools
yeah,
that just travel around?
Yeah, it says right here, it says, DeHaan owns charter schools across the world, but one wonders how much of the $70,000 was even spent on travel. There was a part in the tax records that says $70,000 was spent on travel.
Well, that might have been if she's got schools in South Africa. I got to travel down there. You know, somebody's got to travel down there to make sure those.
Yeah, I don't know. I just thought that was kind of odd. You know, I mean, they're not going to the Indianapolis Zoo. It's not a field trip, you know, it's $70,000. I mean, I just thought that was kind of strange. And I don't know where the money is. I don't know enough about it, but it was something that I questioned in my book that someone should ask some questions about.
In terms of listeners, because everybody listening right now, whether they're an adult or not, they are taxpayers of the state of Indiana, and the money you pay in sales tax in Indiana, the money you pay in income tax in Indiana, roughly half of what you're paying, because over 50% of the total state budget goes to kindergarten through senior year high school education in this state. What should listeners be doing to understand what's going on in K through 12 education? What do they need to do to combat the things that you talk about in Hoosier School Heist?
Well, I think first off, parents need to be aware of the standardized testing and the opt-out movement. There's a, you know, group here, in Indianapolis, opt-out people and across the country. Parents should have the right to tell the state and the federal government that we don't want our kids, vomiting over these standardized tests. I mean, there are kids actually literally getting sick because of this. And it's a way to, try to prove that teachers are not fit to teach. It's a way to hold schools so-called accountable, and that opens up the floodgate for people to come in and take over the school.
For people that are listening who honestly believe that their child's teacher is not doing an effective job, or the school that their kids are in is not doing an effective job, and they get frustrated when they try to talk to the bureaucracy of the school, whether it is a charter or whether it is a public
yeah.
or even where it's a private. what should education reformers be doing to make those schools better, to ease those parents' frustrations instead of coming up with some new wacky so-called innovative idea to improve education instead of trying to fix what ain't working now?
Well, yeah, I think, of course, I mean, the thing about a lot of these people, they will say that money is not the answer, and they'll have these little reports about how so much money was given in this school district, and nothing ever happened. Well, it's true that schools need more money. I mean, there's no question about it. If you had psychologists in the schools, if you have, you know, kids who are vulnerable, who are on the way to prison, wherever it may be, if you had a group of people who could work with these kids, it would make a difference. Mm-hmm. Getting jobs for their parents would make a difference. I mean, it's about poverty, and that's one thing they don't want to discuss much. So I think in public schools need to be held accountable for it too. There are superintendents across Indiana. Some I've talked to, some have support me. There are other ones who could care less about my book.
When charter schools were started, only three entities could charter schools: the mayor of Indianapolis, the Indianapolis Public Schools, and Ball State. IPS never exercised their authority under the law to charter. Ball State has had arguably a horrible record in chartering schools. The Indianapolis mayor's office has had an up and down record in terms of chartering schools. Now I believe any university domiciled in the state of Indiana can charter schools. There's this university up north called Tryon University that authorized some of those imagined schools that were just horrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that another part of the problem, letting anybody, and then you got a state charter school board, letting anybody almost now charter a school?
Yeah, I think that's a problem too. Yeah, in Ball State, they dropped the ball on Imagine, and they charge, you know, they're making millions in fees to do this too. So, it's a problem.
You talked about the hedge fund folk, you talked about the Wall Street folks, you talked about the Amway folks, the Walmart folks. What about the regular business community here in Indianapolis and Indiana? What has been, in your view, in the book, their role in all of this?
Well, I don't know a lot about all the businesses in Indiana. I mean, the chamber is, of course, been
state chamber.
Yeah, they've been. There are some things that, you know, preschool education they're for. I mean, that's great. But they also have funded the candidates who are for this movement too. So,
is there a sequel to this book?
I'm hoping. Yeah, like I said, there's a lot I didn't get time to write. I spent at least 6,000 hours writing this book. It was an unbelievable task. Hard in various ways because it was time consuming. It wasn't really too hard. It was like putting together a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would like to continue to work on it.
All right. The book is called Hoosier School Heist. How much it cost?
$13 if you buy it off of me, and if you buy it on Amazon, you know, they charge their little cut off of it, so you have it for
Bezos got to make some money, yeah, so he can lose a whole lot of other money. You know how that works. And you can go to Amazon.com, or more importantly, you can, you know, cut Mr. Amazon out of the deal and get it from Hoosier.
Schoolhouse.com.
Hoosierschoolhouse.com.
Hoosierschoolhouse.com. Yeah, and I'll also be at the
you got a book signing the first of the month.
It's at the Legacy Center
over by Tech High School.
Tech High School, and it's sponsored by Parrot Power, Indianapolis, and the Black and Latino Policy Institute. Starts at 4, goes to 6. February 1st, Sunday.
All right, let me go to Ruth at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos. This is Ruth Woods.
Hi, Ruth. How you doing?
Fine. How are you?
Okay.
Great. Great show. I wanted to talk about the standardized testing and the amount of money that those tests generate.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the biggest, it comes through the College Board, which is a 501c3, and I understand that they have one of the largest bank accounts of any 501c3 in the country. And they are behind most of the state mandates that a certain percentage of every high school must take the AP classes. This is passed in the state of Indiana behind Florida. Also in the charter system with Tony Bennett, there was a problem with his wife being on the board, the charter board. So there are a lot of connections, family connections made through these various entities that are connected with charter and with standardized testing, and it seems to be all about money and not about our children.
Good point. Speaking of testing, what is it? The new iStep Plus test is supposed to be on computers. They were doing real time testing this week in a number of school districts across the state, and it didn't work.
Well, I'm not familiar with that, Amos, but I'm telling you, this testing, standardized testing, is something that moves all the way up to the college level. I have had discussions with professors who've had to change their process of testing because of the amount of cheating that goes on from some of their students from abroad. And we talk about American schools not being so hot, but yet we have the whole world rushing to get into American colleges. So you have to ask yourself, you know, what is the truth? What is the truth? Is education all about making money, or is it about our children?
Thank you, Ruth.
And the situation with McGraw-Hill, they had messed up the iStep test a couple of years ago. Now they were doing the testing to see whether the test this year is more computer-based, and the system wasn't working well. It seemed to me if you got all this money, you're going to make sure you got enough servers and computers and stuff to do what you got to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the group, as she was talking about, the College Board. Now,
that's the SAT in there.
Yeah, I believe it's Todd Houston has some connections to them, right? And then Tony Bennett may be involved in something along those lines. Now, I can't remember exactly, but Tony Bennett's wife went on to work with Charter Schools USA, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
Doug Bush's friends. Yeah.
Is all of this concern about big dollars in public education, because it's not just here in Indiana, it's in other states across the country. Is this going to hurt Jeb Bush in his quest to try to be the next president of the United States in 2016?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. You think Mitch is going to run with him?
He'd have to take a big pay cut from what he's getting at Purdue University. Dr. Doug Martin, he's the author of the book, Hoosier School Heist. Thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.
Thank you so much.